welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. Just a little sound clip there from my redneck friend. You know, Bill picked that a long time ago.
Yeah.
Little Jackson Brown. Little did we know. little did we know we'd play it for like 12 years. How crazy are we? So what do we have going on, Bill, with our sponsorship?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour. It's Pape Machinery. They're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They've got tractors, mowers, implements, great service department. If you got to have your tractor worked on or need repairs of any kind, go up and see them. Got a great parts department, sales department, full line dealer. And you can see them at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, which is just north of Redding, a few miles. Or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
Yes. So, we're... You know, I'll tell you what, it never ends, the stupid plans that government has for people. We should have called the show Stupid Plans a long time ago, because that's all we ever talk about is like one stupid plan after the next. The terrible part is people...
Well, it's not a stupid plan from the European perspective.
Correct. That's what I was going to say, is it's a stupid plan for those of us in the receiving position, but for those in the delivering position, it's going to work out nicely for them. And I guarantee you, people had no idea the amount of media, worldwide media, that was captured. Give those stats again, William, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, in terms of book publishing in the English-speaking world, the eight companies I profiled, in fact, three of them, probably have 75-80% of the market. In terms of music, those three companies, probably two-thirds of the American market. There's basically five companies that have 99% of the American music market. Four of them are European.
Can you rattle those off for us again?
Sure. Vivendi, which owns Universal Music Group. There's Warner Music Group, which is owned by this Russian-born Jew who lives in London. There's Sony, which is owned by Sony from Japan. There's Bertelmann Music Group, which used to be a major player. Now they've dropped off into what they call the indie market, but it really isn't the indie market. But they still own 3.5 million song copyrights. And then there's Spotify, which now has 100 million American regular users, of whom 40 million are premium content users. But to a large extent, all Spotify is doing is acting as a middleman for BMG and for Universal. And those two companies, they own half the music copyrights in the world. In terms of academic book publishing or academic journal publishing, those eight companies, once again, well over, but probably around, 40% to 50% of the global market. In terms of science publications dealing with climate-related issues, well over 90% are coming out of these. They also put out a lot of climate fiction books now, which are very popular. They put out hundreds of novels and short stories where the theme is global warming and how global warming has destroyed the planet. They've been doing this in a concerted effort, Bertelsmann and Holzbrink, since about 2007. I think they put out over 400 novels now dealing with how global, set in some sci-fi future where global warming has destroyed the planet. These companies have deep inroads in textbook publishing and in educational facilities around the English-speaking world. So high school libraries and undergraduate university core English courses often use cli-fi or climate fiction books as regular readings now. So there's millions upon millions of students that are regularly reading these, novels set in the future, et cetera. And plus, advertising. That publicist group is, I think, the third world's largest advertising company. They're headquartered in Paris. But Vivendi has a subsidiary called Havas, also one of the world's largest advertisers. That group called Publicis, they have, I don't know how many brands, like Saatchi & Saatchi, Leo Burnett, Epsilon, Razorfish, Stargom, Zenith, all these that appear to be standalone publication, advertising, marketing firm are all owned by Publicis. Publicis has 80,000 employees. They've got 1,200 employees just in their New York office. Came across a little website article about, you know, their new New York office, and it's this space age affair, fills a whole office tower. Key to understanding what the Europeans are up to is you go to a website called the World Business Council on Sustainable Development. It's a consortium of 200 leading multinationals. I counted 97 of them are Europeans. A lot of them are major advertisers in the American market. I could only find one sort of online, freely available publication discussing, you know, European purchasing of American media space, ad space, and they listed five companies that were spending about $10 billion a year. But there's a lot of companies they didn't mention, like IKEA and Michelin, and they're all members of this World Council, World Business Council on Sustainable Development. And if you, the more you read into European business, you realize how integrated an operation it is and how integrated they are into their host company, countries. So you've got probably 100 businesses, like one called AM InBev. They manufacture Budweiser beer, Corona beer. These are major advertisers. Bayer, the company that, you know, used to make aspirin, now they make, you know, Flintstones vitamins and Alka-Seltzer. These companies are major advertisers. And I would put it at, you know, $20, $30 billion a year of ad space they are buying from the mainstream media in the United States. And they are, that their ads themselves are being made by publicists and by the vending. So there's all sorts, like multi-level marketing going on. They all have all sorts of, not subliminal, but collateral messages. Like, how often do you see an ad where it's going to be a mixed racial couple or a gay couple in the ad, even though it's got nothing to do with the product they're selling?
Every ad? Yeah. 100%
all
of the ads? Yeah.
The question is, you know, how is it that the mainstream media is so divorced from normal Americans? You have to really look at this concerted effort of these European companies, and a lot of, like, Pirelli, I could just get on the list, like Nestle. These are major advertisers, and they're all members of multiple groups committed to the climate agenda, committed to all sorts of collateral political agendas. And to repeat, they hire publicists and Vivendi to create their ads. But an advertiser's boycott can shut down some of these big media outlets. So for them to be putting that kind of money into the mainstream media gives them a lot of clout. And it's one of the explanations as to how this agenda is being put forward.
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
It's a combination of the above.
Yeah.
The fact that they're major book publishers and academic journal publishers allows them to lead academics around by the nose. If you want to be a career academic, every time you apply for a job, they want to know, where have you published? You know, it's publish or perish. They want to know, how many articles have you published in major journals? And these companies that I profiled there, they absolutely dominate that market. So that gives them a lot of influence on the university scene, and that gives you the authorities. And typically when you talk to your average citizen, all you get back from them is the argument from authority. You describe to them how the science is bogus.
Right.
And their only response is going to be, well, the authorities are saying that, you know, global warming is real and it's caused by humans and it's going to cause a great catastrophe. You know, and who are you to criticize the authorities? I don't know what's her name, S.C. Cupp from CNN.
Yeah.
I watched a little clip she had the other day. She was denouncing Marjorie Taylor Greene for questioning, you know, climate orthodoxy. The only argument she was putting forward is she was just making a list of the authorities who believe that catastrophic anthropogenic global warming is real. And she wasn't giving any actual scientific argument. She was just, you know, reiterating the argument from authority. So in terms of decoding things, it's always a two-stage process. You can present fairly cogent arguments as to why that hypothesis is dubious. Then you have to present an argument as to how it came to pass that the authorities were wrong. And truth be known, and you go to a country like Germany, there's maybe two organizations that employ 60,000 scientists.
Oh, wow.
And the money's all coming from the government. And they can march them around like cadets on a parade square.
Yeah, they're fully captured.
That's long been Germany's history. You know, these academics are not. Academic freedom is an oxymoron. It's like, you know, military intelligence. It's like, you know, jumbo shrimp or something. It's something that just doesn't exist. It's like athletic scholarship. There is no academic freedom. These academics are often on, you know, short-term contracts. They win tenure only by proving themselves absolutely devoted to the agenda. So, and Germany in particular has a very long history of treating its scientists and scholars as instruments of foreign policy. They have always viewed science as sort of like an Olympics where they want to win, and they sort of, they're a team. And then victory means imposing their scientific interpretation on the world. But the other European countries are in the same game. And these are the authorities. They have a driven agenda. They are, you know, lying hooers, one and all. What else can I say?
Yeah.
They said hooers,
that
Bill.
Is how you,
it's Bill's favorite word.
You have to. Well, that is what they are. You know, they, you know, so basically they say that the authorities, they're talking about a bunch of academics, usually who are on 1-year contracts, and they know full well that if they ever came out against the orthodoxy, the climate orthodoxy, they would be blackballed right out of that profession.
See, and the more that they, the more they capture, well, the other place we see it here, I don't know about up where you are, but we see it in the cannabis industry. It's good. It's good for you. Somebody sent me a thing in a chat room about how it cures cancer. It's like, nope, sorry, cannabis in all forms causes cancer. Just ridiculous. I mean, just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, it's legal in California, is it not?
Oh, yeah. We never met a bad idea we didn't need to legalize.
For quite a while now. Yeah, it's leading to a lot more pot smoking, as far as I can see. And no, I think I've seen a lot of people over the years who are addicted to marijuana, and it's taking a real toll on their mental and physical health. I'm sort of two minds about it, you know. But you're talking to somebody where the government is now handing out heroin to people.
Yeah, terrific.
Well, we have Oregon. Oregon, right across the border, that's doing the same thing. So,
well, the real place where, you know, for all the people who think it doesn't impact them, when you look at all these shootings, these crazy shootings, you have 99% of them are tied to high THC use. So you use high potency THC, you wind up with a psychotic break, you feel like it's okay to go shoot people. So we're busy running around going, oh my God, we need to take away guns from people because that's why they're shooting everyone. It's like, no, that might not be it actually, but no one wants to look at what's really doing it. The same is going to happen when the price of everything, like it already is, going through the roof. Nobody wants to look at
In Canada, the price of marijuana is falling like a stone.
Oh,
it is becoming more and more available.
Oh, good. Maybe
the cartels will move up there,
80%.
And yeah, we can stop chasing them around here. You can have our cartels. I don't know if the Mexican cartels like Canada though. It's pretty cold.
Pot to the States for a long time here. You'd have a hard time breaking into this market.
They're really part and parcel of the same sort of problem. It's coming at people from all sides, kind of like you were talking about with the books and the radio and the music and the advertising, and all that just keeps pumping and pumping and pumping in the same message.
There's a concerted agenda at work. There's multiple agendas. There are elites that they're fighting amongst themselves. So it's not as though we're in a totalitarian society. We're in a society where there's clusters of elites. But certainly, as regards climate, it is primarily driven by the Europeans, but they've got a very concerted campaign to capture cultural assets in the English-speaking world and to use those assets to advance this energy transition, which makes good sense to them, but it's a catastrophe for us. There's other aspects of things that are going on, you know, that are very detrimental to the population, for sure. You know, this complete liberalization of drugs, You know, I do. I don't. I wrote that one book in Malthus to Mephistone. I have a history of that. And the Malthusians have long, you know, conjured up ways to increase the mortality rates of what they view to be the social problem group. These are highly elitist people, and they have a very negative view of the sort of lower fringes of the working class and of the sort of of the chronically unemployed. They really want to bump these people off the raft, and they Malthus himself was quite unapologetic about it. You know, he wanted housing built by swamps, and he wanted them to discourage proper hygiene, you know, promote alcoholism, promote homosexuality. There was a whole bunch of methods by which you could really diminish their birth rate and increase their mortality rate. There was a time, you know, in the eugenics movement when they were quite unapologetic and open about what they were doing. But after the World War II, they developed what was called the crypto-eugenic strategy, and it was concocted by the head of the International Planned Parenthood Federation, and he goes, "We are going to proceed with the eugenic strategy. However, we are never going to use the word eugenics again."
And sort of Margaret Sanger kind of screwed him on that one.
Oh, yeah. Margaret Sanger, you know, she openly called for the castration or sterilization of all the unemployed men in America. She would go, she was a popular speaker at the Women's Auxiliary of the Ku Klux Klan across America and explicitly raised it.
Wow.
That's who the abortion movement is. That's why this whole left-wing, right-wing thing gets all mixed up.
Right.
If you really know who the pro-abortion industry is, I mean, these people were openly racist. Openly classist. You know, they only caught on to the sort of women's rights things much later. They used that as a pretext. But their agenda was to, you know, eliminate certain social groups. If people knew what the agenda was, you know, people wouldn't, it would expose the truth. I mean, who's really, you know, the radical right out there? It's the abortion fanatics.
Yeah, and the crazy part is that that's all available. All that information is available, but the narrative doesn't feed it, so, you know, we must continue to repeat the chant. It's a little bit spooky. We'll be right back. We've got to take a quick break.
Go ahead.
I have to take a quick break, sorry. This goes so fast. Whenever you're on, it's like really super. If I want to burn 2 hours really fast, I just call you. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Yes, I think we'll just play the Twilight Zone all the time now. Just over and over and over. Every commercial should have the Twilight Zone playing in the background.
Hey, William, how is the green energy deal impacting Britain? I mean, they're out of the EU now. Are they faring any better?
Well, Britain is probably been the primary victim. Britain has enormous coal reserves. The history of the climate change campaign was that it was primarily a petroleum phase-out campaign. It was during Thatcher's administration that she had the war with the National Union of Miners. It almost turned into a civil war. It was the most violent strike in British history. And significant sections of the British establishment decided that the only way they were really going to destroy the National Union of Miners was to actually phase out the entire coal industry, which they did. So now Britain is like California. They're importing a huge amount of electricity. They've switched primarily to natural gas. They don't have much of that. They've almost 100% phased out coal, although they're trying to go back on that a bit now, although they've demolished a lot of their plants. The Germans have bought a lot of their power generators. I would say most British electricity now, even the stuff that's on British soil, is owned by German companies. They are experiencing extreme fuel inflation. People are burning books to stay warm in Britain. It has been a fiasco. It's one of the subtexts of why Boris Johnson got the boot. He's extremely unpopular. Not everyone puts it together. You know, what Britain has to do if they want to survive is go back to coal. But even the climate skeptics there don't want to do that. They keep telling themselves that they've got natural gas, which they don't have. But it has been a fiasco. It's another example of a California, of a company that went way too far down the climate energy agenda, and now they're saddled importing a lot of their electricity, paying vastly more than their neighbors for that electricity, and they're experiencing brownouts and what have you. So that is a country that has made a notorious blunder in phasing out coal.
Yeah.
You know, at the start of the climate campaign, they were 75% of their electricity came from coal. It is now down to like 1%, near zero. Yeah, last year, they went 3 or 4 months with no coal-fired electricity. And oh, how they were so proud of themselves. At least the environmentally controlled mass media were so proud of themselves. But now they're just saddled with abnormally high electricity prices, blackouts, and paying through the nose to import natural gas. Even their metallurgical industry is having to import coal from Venezuela. It has been a fiasco for them.
Yeah.
Bottom line.
Well, the coal industry, at least in the U.S., I know, they cleaned up their act pretty good. I mean, you can run these coal plants now fairly efficiently with low emissions. They monitor those emissions. I know every smokestack in California has monitors attached to it that if they reach a certain level, it automatically signals Sacramento, and they get a phone call.
Don't they get hit with a nuclear missile from space?
Yeah, probably. But I know they can't emit over a certain amount, and they have to shut down. So they're really good about monitoring what comes out of these stacks now. And it was my understanding the coal industry was the same way, but because coal had a bad rap, they went after them, and here we are now. No coal plants. Well, we still have some, but not like we used to.
No, America's gone from 60% new electricity from coal to 22%. But each of those, like acid rain, was a complete fraud. You know, they, after all the hullabaloo about how much damage acid rain was doing, the American government did a $500 million study, and they concluded that there were no forests being damaged by it. The Europeans did a similar thing after this hysteria about how coal was destroying forests. They realized it wasn't destroying it at all. Nitrogen oxide is basically another fertilizer like CO2. Sulfur dioxide, once again, absolutely minimal effect. There were a few hundred lakes in all of the United States were showing some acidification due to sulfur oxide pollutants. And they realized that the study said that for a cost of $750,000 a year, throwing handfuls of lime into those lakes would neutralize their acidity. And this was not an environmental problem at all. And the third one was mercury poisoning. And the only group that even the environmentalists claim were at risk were pregnant women who lived almost exclusively on a freshwater fish diet. And they failed to come up with a single example in all of the United States of a woman having a deformed baby as a result of eating too much freshwater fish. I mean, it was a medical problem that simply did not exist. So what they forced the coal industry to do was they had to switch to a lot of these low-sulfur coals, which don't burn as well, and put in all these over-engineering designs, these scrubbers and what have you,
right,
to take out chemicals that were basically harmless.
That were doing
but
nothing.
There's still no getting around the fact that coal produces more carbon dioxide per kilowatt than does natural gas. But who cares? Carbon dioxide is the gas of life.
Yeah.
We should be pumping carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. I would be worried if carbon dioxide levels were declining. That would be a real threat to life on Earth. Carbon dioxide is fertilizer in the air. Ask anyone who runs a greenhouse or a grow hop. They pump it into it.
Oh, sure.
It's simply a harmless chemical.
Yeah, we've done shows on
getting
that.
Around.
Yeah, it's the CO2 thing is just an absolute fraud, but that's what they captured everybody with. And it's interesting, we were talking during the break that all of these things, you know, the great cannabis, you know, oh, it's so good for you, it's so healthy, what a great alternative, it cures all these things. That big lie, very similar to, you know, cigarettes, they were going to solve everybody's problems, then, oh, magically, they were no good for you. But these things all travel the same path. You know, they start out with all this imaginary science that somehow captures our world. We all believe it. They don't come out with... It's interesting. The secondhand smoke thing was a great example. We interviewed the guy that put up the hypothesis that secondhand smoke causes cancer. And while we were talking to him about something totally different, he goes, "Hey, do you remember hearing that?" We were like, yes. He goes, "Yeah, would you be surprised to know that it doesn't cause cancer? I actually proved it didn't cause cancer. Like, I thought it did. I studied it. It didn't. And no one published my findings. So everyone still believes it causes cancer." And that's the problem.
I've definitely read about that. Yeah, and it's entirely believable, too. If you look at the small amount of smoke you get from secondhand breathing in smoke compared to what a cigarette smoker is actually taking.
Yeah.
They're taking in 1,000 times as much.
Well, he said, you know, it might cause some allergies, or he said it didn't. He didn't claim that it had no effect, but what he said was the hypothesis was that it caused cancer. That's what they published. Then they never published the finding to say that actually the hypothesis was proven false. And this stuff is all the same way. You know, CO2 is going to destroy the planet. The end. The end. We just don't talk about anything beyond that.
We solved it.
Science is propaganda.
Yeah, how do we get out of this? William, got any ideas? Since you did all this study.
Truth, you know, and just shows like this and keep getting the truth out there and getting people to do their own research, getting people to research the sociology of science. You know, scientists, you know, aren't the only people that take, you know, sort of oaths to tell the honesty. I mean, journalists all swear to tell the truth. Does anyone believe that?
Yeah, we all know how that seems to be working out.
Swear to, you know, tell the truth. Nobody believes that. And we should have the same sort of cynical attitude towards scientists. These are simply, for the most part, they are just propaganda. Everyone has a menu of scientific orthodoxies they believe and they don't believe. Like, for the most part, I believe most of the things that scientific orthodoxy would say. I believe in the biological theory of evolution. I more or less believe in Darwinian evolution. Not everybody does. I do not believe in the Big Bang theory of the origin of the universe. I do not believe in the Einsteinian, you know, claptrap at all. That is a meaningless nonsense.
Well, you don't believe men can have babies. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Are you a heretic?
Men can have babies. I have a standard view of a sort of biological gender. I don't buy into this idea that you can sort of pick what gender you are.
Well, However, you can't pick what sex you are. I don't care what gender you choose. You don't get to pick what sex you are. That's chromosomally defined.
No. Humans, nor any other species on the planet, because the bird, like a mallard duck, get to choose what gender they are.
Yeah.
Humans are in the same category as that. But everyone has a sort of a list of sciences where I trust the authorities and sciences where I don't. There's a professor in Toronto is setting up a group that's arguing that psychiatry is a pseudoscience. And I find that rather intriguing. Like, she's of the view that psychiatrists don't help anybody, that their medicines are doing more harm than good. And she just more or less debunks and questions everything that's coming out of psychiatrists. I'm kind of partial to that. You know, that I really don't think psychiatrists do a lot of help for people. I don't think a lot of the medications they put people on do them any good either. But sort of everyone has their menu. Certainly as far as you know, the catastrophic anthropogenic global warming hypothesis goes, put me down as someone who's a profound skeptic.
Well, when you look at the implications,
a deliberate lie.
Well, yeah. When you look at the implications of all of this and the outcomes that they have planned, you know, it's kind of like, gosh, I don't know, didn't we learn this like when we were kids? You know, you get invited to somebody's birthday party who was a kid that was never nice to you. Don't you kind of survey the guest list to find out if you have any friendlies, you know, before you go stick your neck in the noose? We learn this as children. To survey the end game, right? Because we know we're going to give up a certain amount of time. Our parents are going to drop us off. We're going to be trapped there. And you realize, oh, all the mean girls are going to be there. This is how it goes for girls anyway. You realize all the mean girls are going to be there. No nice girls. I'm going to be like the victim at this thing. This is going to turn out bad. I'm going to spend my time doing something else. And so I don't understand when we get older how we sort of forget that real basic, you know, deciding how the thing's gonna turn out, and we look at these people want us in rabbit hutches, in jammed in these big cities,
driving little roller skate cars that run on electricity.
Yeah, with no access to the big world, you will not go anywhere, and you're gonna work.
I like the phrase surveying the end game. That's one of the ways to really untie the climate campaign.
Yeah, absolutely.
You sit people down and say, you know, what would be the best energy policy for North America? Like, what if, you know, we set aside this climate flim-flam for a moment, and most people, most adults who've even, you know, thought about it, you know, they would be promoting petroleum, coal, to a lesser extent, nuclear. Of course, in Canada, we have this massive hydroelectric potential. But if people thought, you know, a made-in-America energy policy, what would be the best way to provide cheap, reliable energy for Americans? And nobody's going to come up with wind power, solar power,
no,
or these other types of technologies.
No.
And if people realize, you know, well, I encourage people to drop the word climate, just talk about energy policy. What should our energy policy be? And the only reasons why we would even be entertaining, you know, biofuels and solar farms and electric cars is because of this climate agenda.
Yeah, and because they're being forced to.
Here we have winners and losers here.
Well, we have a huge dam creates a massive amount of hydropower. Hydropower is the cleanest, greenest energy on the planet, and yet the climate guys are using all of their energy to take out dams and stop hydropower.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells you that clean, green energy is not the goal. I mean, that's always my quickest debunking of this. Is
good
like
point. That's a very good point.
Yeah, why are we not promoting hydro?
We are building dams. In Canada,
oh, they are?
It's like 60% of all electricity comes from hydro.
Yeah.
I was checking. The U.S. has not built a major hydro dam, I think, in almost 50 years.
Oh, and up by us, they want to take out four
storage ones.
Well, they want to take out four dams, and they're touting that as the greatest, the biggest dam removal project in history, in the history of the world, and like, all right, you guys.
That's a tragedy.
Yeah, you guys are idiots. We have to take a really quick break, though, and then we'll come right back with our guest, William Walter Kay. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, they say the sea is rising. Well, that's all right with me. Because there ain't no other place than on the sea I'd rather be. And that second coming's coming. It's right around the bend. And someday could be any day, and this world is gonna end. But that's alright, that's okay. There ain't nothing we can do about the whole thing anyway. It's a hang-on kind of ride. We're spinning through space and time, rocking this big old rock, just trying to have some fun. So let's drink another beer. Here's to another year. Let's take another crazy trip around the sun.
Now don't talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days. Even the air. They're running out of rhinos. What do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. boys is casual entertainment. We aim to be. Am I partaking the right?
I ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze.
No.
No.
Oh, gosh, William, I'm glad you came on with us. You know, the environmental shows, there's so much fun music. It just makes the world seem happier. So we have like, plus or minus 15 minutes. What have we neglected in our journey with you? Stump the panel. Ruin the show.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I really hope the Republicans slaughter the Democrats in the midterm. I hope they do it in such a decisive fashion that they can perhaps put a brake on this whole climate energy campaign. Of course, you have to be wary of the rhinos who will try to, you know, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. But I've been following the Russian-Ukrainian war, and Biden has so misstepped here. He has just stomped on a landmine. It is just getting worse and worse. And if you, I'm no Nostradamus, but if you roll the calendar forward to November, that is going to be such an obvious, monstrous failure. Going into it, you know, pride precedes the fall. And these guys, they're the smartest guys in the room, right? They think they can spin anything. They think they can spin a military disaster and no one's really going to notice it. But I do not think they really calculated the extent of the military disaster that they have inflicted upon the Ukrainians. I've been following that very closely. I would estimate Ukrainian fatalities right now, at 55,000 and over 150,000 wounded. We're at day 130 of this war, and they have had more fatalities than the Americans suffered in the entire Vietnam War. It has been an absolute massacre on the battlefield, and your mainstream media outlets, including Fox News, are just lying to the American people. They are concealing the extent to which this has been just a one-sided bloodbath on the battlefield, and they're not going to be able to cover this up forever.
No.
And they're not going to be able to cover it up even as far as the midterm. And make no mistake about it, this is Whitey Biden's war. I mean, even Trump, and I'm not a fan anymore, came out yesterday and said that he would never have allowed this escalation to have occurred. As soon as Biden took office, you know, the Ukrainian Nazis on the front line just started to escalate. They started to shell civilian centers. They started sending commandos in to blow up infrastructure. They were clearly intent on a massive ethnic cleansing exercise that they knew was going to be utterly unacceptable to the Russians. Keep in mind that all of eastern Ukraine, you know, the Donbass region, those are Russian-speaking people. Those are Russian self-identifying people, even though they are living in the Ukraine. And it became pretty obvious as soon as Biden took office that there was going to be this brutal ethnic cleansing campaign, and that is what caused this war. But I think that the really smart guys and the neocons or whatever you want to call them inside the Biden administration thought this was all going to be containable. You know, there's an old saying that the generals prepare to fight the last war again. They don't really prepare to fight the next war. I do not think they really anticipated the direction this war was going to take and how absolutely devastated the Ukrainian army was going to be and how quickly they were going to be devastated like this. But I don't see this going on for too many more months. I think Zelensky is going to get executed by his own generals, or he's going to flee the country just ahead of the bullet. And all of this is going to come and hit Biden in the face like a moose turd pie. And he is going to look so bad by November. Him and Hunter and the rest of these evildoers.
Well, you've got a ton of information on that. And we talked about doing a show about it, which we really do need to do and we want to do. Hey, what are you doing next week? When I read your other article about the environmental thing, I thought, you know what? We've got to get that back onto people's radar again, because as they're paying all these high prices and all that, we need to keep reminding people why that's happening, because what's the media telling them? You know, it's the Ukrainian thing and it's the Russians, and I don't think people are really buying that anymore.
Oh, I love that. I love this sort of Putin's price hike.
Yeah. And I don't think most people are buying that, but it fell
flat on its face. Nobody bought it.
No.
It's like the old Russian collusion thing. They're trying to whip it back up.
Oh, they still love the Russian collusion thing.
A lot of the propaganda coming out of the Ukrainians is just flat out, racist, anti-Russian propaganda. That is not going to sell in America. People are not going to buy it.
No, but see, in the absence of another rational explanation, that's what plays in the back of people's heads. They wouldn't tell you that they believe it, but then if you kind of looked at them and said, "All right, so what's doing it?" I'm not sure that most people are putting the pieces together. Like, I didn't know the amount of the volume, how about, of capture of our media by the climate guys in Europe. I mean, you see that.
I know of no other person who's focusing on that information.
I know. That's why I thought we might want to get that out there.
Mark Morano. You know who Mark Morano is?
Yes, we love him.
Okay, well, he just interviewed me for an hour on his show about a week ago.
Oh,
and this was all news to him. He kept going, "Well, this is fascinating." And he's, I'm a fan of Mark Morano too, but he had never heard of any of this before. And he has been in this biz, for 30 years. Nobody seems to want to focus on the sort of this angle of things. They tend to, they're trying to read a whole other agenda into this. Climate isn't that complicated. It's really about the energy transition and who benefits and who suffers from that. Too often they're trying to read sort of a broad political campaign, the sort of sinister conspiracy. That stuff's going on. Like, we are heading towards a surveillance state. We are heading towards a uniparty state. These things are going on, and they're going on independently of the climate campaign. The climate campaign itself is basically a petroleum phase-out. It's a coal phase-out. And that has winners and losers. And the primary drivers of this are the Europeans. And the primary mechanism by which they are impacting culture and politics is through the control of these cultural assets. But yeah, not to blow my own horn, but nobody else, not even within the climate skeptical community, is focusing on this. Most people have never even heard of the names of Bertelsmann, the Bertelsmann book publishing company, but they are currently publishing 50% of the books in the United States.
Yeah, you start realizing that agenda, and when you said that about the commercials, it's true. You watch some of these commercials, and it's like, what the hell? Just by the commercials, you would think that 99% of the people in this country were gay. It's the same with the transgender thing. Everybody's transgender, and it's like, well, for me, whenever I see am being bombarded with that, what I see is population control. Because if you get them to castrate themselves and and same too with marijuana, because that does the same thing, creates infertility, creates birth defects, all those things, and psychosis and cancer and death. Why would you promote all that if you didn't want to get rid of people, or you didn't want to just warehouse them?
Yeah, just control them. I mean, that's really bottom line, is they're going to control you. And I think, and I've said this all along, the liberal media and the liberals in the big cities are going to go along with this. until it hits them in the pocketbook. And it never has really done that. Well, it is now.
It's hammered us in the rural areas, always. And I think get off scot-free. But
well, now it's in the big cities.
The grocery prices are killing them,
yeah,
even
and
if they don't have gas.
Look at the turnaround. All of a sudden, they're talking about the red wave. Well, it's because people are looking at this going, holy cow, I can't make it on my current salary anymore because of energy prices, because of food prices. And they're changing their tune a little bit. And I think that's maybe that's what it took to get people to think about this and really look at why it's happening.
Yeah.
Inflation is the great destabilizer.
Isn't it?
You know, there's a strike wave now going on in Ontario. Yeah, even the lamest of union bureaucrats have to sort of get militant when there's now 11-12% inflation. I mean, their membership saying, you've got to do something about this. And for the vast majority of people who have no sort of union membership, yeah, it's definitely hitting them. And I'm certainly noticing food inflation, some of the absurd prices I'm seeing in the grocery store, like little packages of raspberries for $8.
Yeah.
You really see it. And yeah, you're right. Inflation brings it home. And if the plan is to dramatically increase energy costs impact every cost.
Everything.
And the plan is like to dramatically increase energy costs. The environmentalists have been calling for this for a very long time. They're disappointed that people are not driving less with all of these increases. It's a very inelastic thing, fuel prices. But a lot of people don't have any choice. There's a certain amount of driving they have to do, and these businesses that have to deliver these goods, they don't have any choice either.
Nope.
They got to try to just pass that price increase along. But once again, the Democrats, the environmentalists, the climateers, they have to be blamed for this. They are the cause of this. There is no reason why in North America we should be experiencing energy inflation. We are the fossil fuel superpower of the world. If they would, get rid of a lot of these bogus environmental regulations, energy would be the cheapest in the world. It would be a lot cheaper than it is now. This is artificially imposed on people. That's the message that has to be gotten out there.
Yeah.
This is an agenda to phase out our most valuable and usable fuel.
Well,
you're causing electricity to go higher.
Oh, right. Yeah, everything. There's a big auction yard right on Interstate 5 here in California. It's called Ritchie Brothers, and they auction every month. They have a big auction down there. It's usually farm equipment and orchard equipment and stuff like that. And we drove by there last week, and their entire yard is full of trucks, 18-wheelers. It's full of trucks. That should tell you something. When you have $6,
you're being driven bankrupt.
Yeah, they can't do it. I mean, I was listening to a story the other day. Truckers were making, these guys make a ton of money driving trucks. Well, when you factor in all their expenses, they were making about 20 cents a mile, which they're not getting rich, but they can make a living. Now with the fuel costs as high as they are, a lot of these truckers can't pass on the fuel surcharge. And guess what? They're not making 20 cents a mile anymore, and those trucks are getting turned back. Banks are getting them back. Auction yards are filling up. And when that really hits home, it's really going to escalate the price of goods because everything comes on a truck at some point. Everything comes on a truck.
I know a trucker who is sleeping in his truck. That's how rough it is. And he said he's not the only one doing it. He's turned into what they used to call a rubber tramp. There's people who live in their cars. He's turned into one of those.
Yeah, it's sad.
He's hanging on to his truck, but he's living in it.
It's brutal. William, we've got to run away here. And we want to talk to you about Ukraine. Check your calendar. We will be back with you.
I posted three articles on Ukraine. I'm planning another one.
Okay.
That will be a bomb of a show. You guys are absolutely awesome.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks, William.
I hope the whole country tunes in.
You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know.
for good.